The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
This is by Walt Whitman. I sing the body electric. I sing the body electric that I am is of my body. Of all that I have had nothing except through my body. And what I should be, I knew I should be of my body. What belongs to me that it does not yet spread in the spread of the universe, I owe to my body. And what I identify I am, I owe to my body inevitably united part to part and made out of a thousand diverse contributions, one identity. I comprehend no better life than the life of my body. This is just a part of it. How it starts off. And I chose it because yesterday we had a Qigong, Neigong class with a new instructor, Leo, who is really working with the energetic body and bringing energy down to the pelvic region and down and down and down, dropping down and down into the body. And we were talking a little bit about this experiential body. I was asking him about it. And it also co-joins with a poet I loved who died on Monday. Their name is Andrea Gibson. I don't know if you know of Andrea Gibson. And I would listen to them. And hear their Dharma. And speaking about the complexities of being in a body. They would speak a lot about gender, experiences of illness. They were living with ovarian cancer for 4 years. Just a very noble being. And they were age 49 when they passed on Monday. And they wrote this poem shortly before they died. It's titled Love Letter from the Afterlife. And I wanted to share this with you. They wrote one part, dying is the opposite of leaving. When I left my body, I did not go away. That portal of light was not a portal to elsewhere, but a portal to here. I am more here than I ever was before. What are they saying? Wow. And then I found out they wrote a poem. I sing the body electric, especially when my power's out. I thought, wow, I remembered this one, and so I got Whitman just to see. And of course, they were performance artists, so they were part of this, I forget what it's called when you do slam kind of poetry, right? So I hope I do justice to channel. Channel Andrea. I sing the body electric, especially when my power's out. This is my body. I have weather vanes. They're especially sensitive to dust storms and hurricanes. When I'm nervous, my teeth chatter like a wheelbarrow collecting rain. I am rusty when I talk. It is the storm in me. And her last lines, say, this is my body, it's no one's but mine, this is my nervous system, my wanting blood, my half-tamed addictions, my tongue tied up like a ball of Christmas lights. If you put a star at the top of the tree, make sure it's a star that fell. Make sure it hit bottom like a tambourine. 'Cause all these worlds are stories. To the staircase, to the top of my lungs, where I sing what hurts and echo comes back. Bless your heart, bless your body, bless your kneecaps. They are so smart. You are so full of rain. There is so much growing. Hallelujah to your weather vanes. Hallelujah to the ache, to the pull, to the fall, to the pain. Hallelujah to the grace and the body and every cell of us all. I think I'll stop right there. So I wanted to look at this teaching of the Buddha too on this experiential body. Someone asked me a way back, what was your first conscious experience? If someone asked you that, what was your first conscious experience? And I went back right away, like childhood memories came up of sand and water, ocean, being on a swing, like just being pushed on a swing, being in like the feeling of tall grasses, but mostly it was sand. I remember my having little legs, then this material I was in that just kept sinking, and it was warm, super warm. Yeah. And then when adolescence kicked in, self-consciousness kicked in big time, comparison. Things happening in the body that were unpredictable, out of control. And from then on, my mind was involved in ways to override what was happening with my body. I was more in the head, in an image. What others might think, what I should look like, what I should dress like, what I was told to dress like. So it took years of Buddhist wisdom, years, and other practices, of course, to untangle what developed as a more negative and dysfunctional body story and behaviors out of that, which I think many of us share. And Andrea, they talk about it a lot. And then I began to learn there are so many body electrics, body of sorrow, body of heartbreak, body of disappointment, body of joy, body of Buddha, body of aspiration, body of trust, body of truth, skin, bones, and flesh body, how the ground holds this samsaric body. In the basic teachings of Buddhism, the question comes up, what is this thing I think of as my body? And I noticed that I was filled with a lot of ideas and concepts about it, opinions. Of course, social scientists call this body image. And I thought I didn't care about it, but actually I did a lot. I did a lot. I really did. So all of us carry evaluations at some point, I think, about the body, which results in beliefs about the body, to where it becomes an object in the world and gets very distorted, and things come out of that distortion. We know that, eating disorders and all kinds of things we do with our body, great problems. Moving unconsciously from the image. And we may and still have a body image. But is that body image our actual body? So from the perspective of Buddha Dharma, our conceptual ideas and images about the body are not the authentic body as Buddha would teach. It's a conceptual body. What Buddha is speaking about is the authentic body, the body of this present moment, the one we're experiencing, the one we are feeling right now, the one you're feeling right now. Now, when I first sat down for Zazen, I was like, oh, I got a body. We know we got a body when we sit down for Zazen, those of you who just learned, right? And all this that we work with to set this up in such a way that we can actually let go, right? That we can set up an architecture to enter into this temple and release body and mind. As my teacher, Daido Roshi, would implore, you are not the body you had yesterday or even the last 10 minutes. The body of now is beyond our ideas and concepts and images and appearance or gender. Dogen would teach that mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. So we're this living, electric, moving organism that's feeling, seeing, hearing, tasting, breathing, vibrating with life now in this present moment. That's the one. That's the electric experiential body without anything on top. Buddha spoke of this as the experiential body, the one we experience rather than the one we think about. Doesn't mean we don't think about our body, but there's another body in the body is where we're going here. And that's what he called it. It was called contemplate the body in the body. And I was like, what the heck does that mean? Contemplate the body in the body. Right here where we experience pain, pleasure, call it peace, focus, joy, the whole of it. It shows up as a body of non-conceptual feeling. So for me, becoming a monastic, making vows to live a life of simplicity, stability, service, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. My life has been a voluntary simplicity. I follow a schedule for like 35 years. You do too, going to work, but mine's like, don't wake up at this time, they come and get you if you don't. This breakfast happens here, you know, Zen time. Now, I wear simple clothing, uniform, we could say. Very simplistic. And it's been healing to relate to my body in such a way as just a vessel of generosity, just not be so concerned with it. And then to practice wholesome action. And to turn from an individual self to community, right? And then also, after many years, there was this growing awareness of an energy that was moving away from my present experiential body, giving more to the community, subtly moving into expectations of what a monastic should be. Kind of bringing the stuff, same things along into this life. Leaving my body behind. And so this awakened, okay, you got to listen. You got to trust more. Listen to my body. Check in. Be more balanced. It was very subtle, but it was there. Something didn't feel right. I became ill. And I was moving from the pleasure of service to just the routine of service in some way. This is what monastics do. Forgetting my enjoyment body within it. So it doesn't mean you have to enjoy everything you do, but if we're doing it, can we find the pleasure in our experience that we're moving in? Because otherwise we're fighting ourselves as we're doing something. And that's not great, right? And I was fighting something as I was doing it. And I even work on that to this day. When we have to do something we don't want to do, how do we enter that? Because that's where our experience is going to be. So if we're in our head ruminating how I don't want to do this, or you're sitting there, I don't want to be here, I want lunch, you know, you're not in your body. It's as simple as that. And there's a split. So it's coming back to that body electric, to what we're experiencing very directly. And so in the practice, we were introduced to the Satipatthana Sutra, Buddhist teaching on four kinds of presence of mindfulness. Because I was looking for teachings about the body and came to this. Daito Roshi didn't teach this Satipatthana Sutta, but I think everybody, it's like the Bible. It's like, read it. It's like the Bible of like Buddhist practice, like mindfulness of what we are. How do we, of our presence, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feeling, mindfulness of mind, mindfulness of things, phenomena, dharma. And in the sutta, the Buddha encourages disciples to meditate, where he writes, body in the body. And the refrain keeps getting repeated. Contemplate the body in the body. And I was not entirely certain what was meant by this. Could Buddha be saying, contemplating the body is not enough? Go deeper and find the body within the physical body. Get it underneath the idea of body. Maybe that's what he's saying. Underneath a mental construct about the body. Body in the body. Kaya kaye. Referring to the body as we experience it. Before we've evaluated our embodied experience. Before we're labeled our embodied experience. So, for example, right now we're breathing. We're breathing. And as you breathe, you see there's a cool, fresh sense of air as you inhale. And as you exhale, you might feel it gets a little bit warmer, a softer feeling in the exhale. Ears are hearing. Sound, eyes are seeing colors and forms and light. This feeling itself is the body in the body. All of this without our ideas. 7A Selassie, who's another Buddhist teacher, she's been living with cancer for 2 decades, if you know her. We've had her here at the temple. And she writes, I often say mindfulness is a misnomer as a translation of sati. Sati is another translation as aware or attention or recollection. Sati, satipatthana. It's a very good word in a lot of ways, but it leads us to think it's all about the mind. The mental faculty of paying attention to the present moment experience, observing phenomena without judgment and remembering what is happening. She writes, our culture already encourages focus on the mind, intellect, and because we're educated to be in our heads, It can be really hard to include the body in our awareness as we're developing the capacity for more presence. It's been a real practice of continuing to bring my awareness down into the body, starting from the feet to feel grounded, so I'm not just caught in the mental loops that I'm in. It can be so powerful to connect to that real presence so that I don't shut down in certain situations. I can actually sense it in my body. It's not just a thought loop that I'm in. This takes a lot of practice to connect with. There is so much that is unacceptable in our world. She says the first task of change is accepting things as they are. We hear that a lot. To recognize the pain of our own bodies, hearts, and minds. The pain of the world is not going away, and in fact, it's a fact of life, and we're not going to outrun this pain, but we can learn to actually practice with mitigating that pain if that's possible. So this is addressing this first task of change, accepting things as they are. We learn to care for ourselves and tend to our needs, and then we can also hopefully help others with their pain so it doesn't turn into suffering and doesn't become part of the loop of grasping or pushing away, because that'll go on forever. Body in the body. These feelings are an immediate, present experience that has nothing to do with what we think about the breath, hearing, or think about the body. It's pure, unadulterated feeling. So it's not easy to enter here, especially if, like many of us, we've had a hard time entering our body. I've had a lot of aversion. This body in the body, this body of present moment experience is fresh, immediate, attentive, self-regulating, and grounded. And it's what becomes our best friend, if you will, in Zazen. The body in the body is paying close attention to its environment. The body in the body is in tune with what's happening right here, right now. It's so present, we often don't even notice it. We take our sensory field for granted in a way. Yet it's always here, a vibrant, embodied part of our moment-to-moment experience. Dido used to say, I said this, we look, but we don't see. We listen, but we don't hear. We eat, but we don't taste. He said, all the data's there, but cognition is not taking place because we're preoccupied with thoughts. We don't experience what's happening. Yeah. So maybe we have a thinking mind right now going on, overriding our experience of just sitting here. The what next? What we're going to do next? Reviewing what happened today. Maybe we think, what will we do after this talk? Hurry up, Hojin. I want my pizza. I'm going to go see some friends. That was so fun last week. We went out after the talk and this is all happening here. Processing, thinking. The thinking mind, of course, has a way of pulling us into the past and into the future. But the body is in the body is radically present. Just go there. That's what he was teaching. Just drop down out of it. Because the breath, why we use the breath to start off with is, you can't breathe the breath yesterday or tomorrow, only now. So that's our entry. The breath can only be breathed now, 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 now. So in your life, when you get spinning out and you need grounding, you've got your breath. You've got your experience happening. Go to it. And part of the freedom of the mind is we can go to the past. We can go to the future. We can fantasize. Imagine, it's the stuff of art. But it's really hard to be in presence, a radical presence, the body in the body. Every mood of our mind is embodied. And some emotions can't be fixed by just breathing. Some things need to be felt through the body. No language, just felt through that this body electric. Just feel it through. The head wants to get involved and say, what's doing it? And da-da-da, and they did this, and I did this. And it's just like dropping in to the body in the body. But we're not taught this. We always go to figure things out and correct and fix. It's without language. For me, the problem always comes trying to fix an experience of the body with a solution of the mind. If I just let myself feel it and not try and come up with a solution of, or the image of how I need to be. I did that a long time ago. Why is this coming now again? It's here. It has arisen. Just drop into it. I told that joke. I think it's a joke. Someone said, trying to investigate ourselves with the mind is like asking a corrupt police department to investigate itself. You don't think it's funny? Okay. It doesn't work. We just can't go to the mind for everything. Because the mind is corrupt sometimes, a lot of times. That's what we're working with, corruption. Trying to kind of like see that. So this experiential body that I'm speaking of is very deep, subtle territory. More than it appears at first glance to practice raw sensation. Yeah. So perhaps you're getting it. It's not the body of materiality. It has little to do with our mind. That's what Buddha points out, what it believes or thinks. And of course, there are things we may never get to feel. We can't feel everything. There are things I may always feel. I cannot think my way out. Just to know some things are felt through the body. Just to know we're opening up a realm of possibility. It's hard. It's really a hard practice. Because we're so tempted to bring it up and get rid of things really quickly. Bypass. This helps us not bypass. To just let it sink in and through this body electric. Don't make an abiding place. Just feel it. Just feel it. The freshness, the aliveness, the vibrancy. It's here, and our body knows. It experiences and feels. So how do we get in touch with the experiential body, which is somewhat hidden some of the time or all the time? And in the beginning of practice and all through, it's hard to discern what is a concept of the body and the experiential body because they're so blended. Feeling things through the body, especially when we're not accustomed to doing so, it can be kind of unbearable. Nearly. It's not, but nearly. It feels that way. And you know, you've got Mother Earth. So you can always drop down on her body. She will hold you in a cradle. Your tears, your squirming, your aches and pains, your suffering, you can just pour it out. She will resonate with it. She will hold it. So physically, I'm talking about drop down. Nobody has to, don't police yourself, right? Let it be experienced. Go in your room, shut the door, go to the park, roll down the hill. We get stiff. We get really stiff, frozen. Maybe we're all learning to be a body in the struggle. Maybe for the first time, we're finding out what it is to have this body and sit as we sit down. And then how not to think it. I remember we had a teacher, a Vipassana teacher, Ralph Steele. Maybe some of you know him. And he came to the monastery early, and he was just teaching Satipatthana Sutta and mindfulness of breathing. I know I am taking an inhale. I know I am letting out an exhale, like that. But he said, first thing he said, which stayed with me to this day, is, take a noble posture because you're a noble being. And I was just like, wow, that was really beautiful. Take a noble posture because you're a noble being. And to move through the world with a noble posture. Maybe this body is an intermediary experience on earth, a vessel to receive the message, to release so much thinking, even listening, and start feeling radically present together. Radically just present together. You know, we were talking with someone, and like, you know, when someone's grieving or something, like, they don't want to lecture, right? It's like, come here, if they'll let you, come here. That's all. Like, this body wants that. Just wants, like, this attention, like, the in its electricity, in its vibration. Sometimes words are helpful, for sure, but it's not all of it. Yeah. So, maybe we feel like we have two bodies. That's good. The first is noticing the old one and the new one, and noticing that blend, how they're blended, how ideas about our body are mixed in with just breathing, this feeling, moving experience. And then gradually, that helps us untangle the concepts we've constructed with our thoughts long enough to sink down into what is happening right here and now. This discernment is not a rejection of thought, of what we think. It's just another realm to live in. That's true. And we haven't really been taught. And the Buddha taught it early on, but we're not reading his Satipatthana Sutra. Thanissara Bhikkhu, a Theravada. Oh, I was looking up, as I was reading this, I always thought this was kind of cool. In terms of identity with beauty, the monastic rules describe the means of beautification denied to monks and nuns. No creams, cosmetics, jewelry, red dye for hands and feet. I thought that was interesting because you realize in ancient India, they too were obsessed with these ideals of beauty, as we are. So it's nothing new. That eliminates a couple things I'm doing. I don't know if I can live without creams. No creams, really? Gotta have some cream. I mean, really. I mean, red dye for the hands and feet? Gotta have it. Gotta have it. Thanissaraguku says, through the Buddha's understanding how perceptions of the body can function both as aids and hindrances in our quest for liberation, he came to realize four kinds of body images, not just two. Healthy positive, unhealthy positive. Healthy negative and unhealthy negative. Healthy meaning leading to long-term happiness, unhealthy leading to long-term suffering and pain. Buddha's training, he says, is to practice in resetting our body image as a useful defense against the skewed messages of our culture as a necessary part of our path. We long to live with more freedom, joy, loving, feeling the body in the electric. Teachings of mindfulness instruct us to know what's happening first as a felt sense, then to cultivate an attitude of curiosity and kindness toward it. I can't control hot flashes. Someone else can't will their way through chronic pain. I can notice, though, when I feel irritated, when I feel heat rising, and meet it with openness, with acceptance. Just the feeling of it, just the feeling the body is speaking. That's how we find ease. It's that simple and it's that difficult. Sometimes it's said like this, it's not what's happening that matters, it's our relationship to it. Shugen Roshi wrote, here we are bodies encountering the Dharma. We have to continuously prepare our whole being to receive the Dharma. It's that simple. It's in receiving the Dharma that our lives are transformed, yet we cannot receive the Dharma if we are preoccupied or filled to the brim with erroneous views. We have to become completely raw and exposed inside and outside to encounter the Dharma, because the Dharma has no body. It wears no clothes. We have to enter without passing through any door and without bringing anything with us. This is not easy because we've accumulated so much, our desires, our attachments, our beliefs, a self in that way. So we have certain practices, especially skillful in helping us to shed our accumulations. These practices are states of mind. Learning the body as the body, body in the body, is in Zazen. Buddha said in the Satipatthana, come friends, contemplate the body in the body, ardent, clear comprehending, unified, with concentrated one-pointed mind in order to know the body as it really is. So in the end, we don't really need to willfully direct our attention to the body as if awareness and the body were two separate things. Mindfulness of the body is an invitation for us to open to the awareness that's already present in the body. Practice is not directing or creating something. We're not directing ourselves or creating something. The beginning and the end of practice is awakening to what's already here, just as it is, moment to moment, within this fathom-long body. So I'll end with Andrea's words, if I may, as a tribute to her today. It's a long poem, I don't know. Okay, we got a little... Is it okay if I read the whole poem? I'll try and channel her, because I've listened to it many times. And they have a lot to offer us. This is my body. I have weather vanes. They're especially sensitive to dust storms and hurricanes. When I'm nervous, my teeth chatter like a wheelbarrow collecting rain. I am rusty when I talk. It is the storm in me. The doctor said someday I might not be able to walk. It's in my blood like the iron. My mother is as tough as nails. She held herself together. The day she could no longer hold my knees, she said, our kneecaps are prayer beds. Everyone can walk farther on their kneecaps than they can on their feet. This is my heartbeat. Like yours, it is a hatchet. It can build a house or tear one down. My mouth is a fire escape. The words coming out don't care that they are naked. There is something burning in here. When it burns, I hold my own shell to my ear. Listen for the parade. When I was 7, the man who played the bagpipes wore a skirt. He was from Scotland. I wanted to move there. Wanted my spine to be the spine of an unpublished book, my fate the first and last page. The day my rib cage became monkey bars for a girl hanging on my every word, they said, you are not allowed to love her. Tried to take me by the throat and teach me I was not a boy. I had to unlearn their prison speak, refuse to make wishes on the star on the sheriff's chest. I started wishes on the stars in the sky instead. I said to the sun, tell me about the Big Bang. The sun said, it hurts to become. I carry that hurt on the tip of my tongue and whisper, bless your heart every chance I get so my family tree can be sure I have not left. You do not have to leave to arrive. I am learning this slowly. So sometimes when I look in the mirror, my eyes look like the holes in the shoe of the shoeshine man. My hands are busy on the wrong things. Some days I call my arms wings while my head's in the clouds. It will take me a few more years to learn. Flying is not pushing away the ground. Safety is not always safe. You can find one on every gun. I am aiming to do better. This is my body. My exhaustion pipe will never pass inspection. And still my lungs know how to breathe like a burning map every time I get lost behind the curtain of her hair. You can find me by the window, following my past to a trail of blood in the snow. The night I opened my veins, the doctor who stitched me up asked me if I did it for attention. For the record, if you ever have done anything for attention, this poem is attention. Title it with your name. It will scour the city bridge every night you stand kicking at your shadow, staring at the river. It does not want to find your body doing anything but loving what it loves. So love what you love. Say, this is my body. It is no one's but mine. This is my nervous system, my wanting blood, my half-tamed addictions, my tongue tied up like a ball of Christmas lights. If you put a star on the top of the tree, make sure it's a star that fell. Make sure it's a star that fell. Make sure it hit bottom like a tambourine, because all these words are stories to the staircase to the top of my lungs, where I sing what hurts and the echo comes back. Bless your heart. Bless your body. Bless your holy kneecaps. They are so smart. You are so full of rain. There is so much growing. Hallelujah to your weather vanes. Hallelujah to the ache, to the pull, to the fall, to the pain. Hallelujah to the grace and the body and every cell of us all. Hallelujah.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.